Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patty LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
There's a cat over here. There's a cat over there. And the wrong one died. And the wrong one died.
Welcome to The Wrong Cat Died, the podcast breakdown of the catastrophe. I'm your host, Mike Abrams, and today we have another amazing guest. She was a swing on the U.S. National Tour 5 in 2006, and then was Demeter closing the 2016 Broadway revival of Cats. So welcome, Samantha Sturm, and thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
I'm excited to have you here. I've talked to so many people from 2016's revival that at this point I'm like, who's left? And I was so excited when you said yes, because I'm, you know, it's fun to hear, and it's really fun to hear and talk to people who got to do both choreographies, because that's not that many people that got to do that. So we will get there, but start at the beginning. When was the first time you ever saw Cats?
Oh, so I kind of lived off of the movie version.
The VHS.
When the VHS, yes, before DVDs were invented, when I was pretty young. And then, and I kind of wore out my tape. Mm-hmm. And then when I was, I think, 12 or 13, I was at a summer camp. And a woman who had played Cassandra on Broadway came and guest taught at this camp. And she taught us Copeland, which was kind of the most famous choreography from the ball. And I remember learning that, and I was hooked. And I couldn't stop doing the choreography over and over. And watching the tape.
And so this was 12. So you're doing a part of the ball as a 12-year-old.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. That's an age for that, I guess. But it's also a famous choreography, really.
Yeah.
So you were a dancer, I'm guessing, growing up watching this tape.
I was. Both my parents were dancers.
Okay.
And so I was dancing from a very young age. And I always wanted to do musicals. When I was, I'm told, 4 or 5, I saw my first Gene Kelly film. And that's when I was like, well, that's what I want to do when I grow up. Mm-hmm. I want to be Gene Kelly, but a girl.
Wow. Okay. So you get to do this section. You now are watching this. And then you go through high school. And then very early, you said you're, you know, 19 years old, you said.
Yeah.
You booked the national tour. So what was that like, I guess, the conversation with your parents and the rehearsal process as a 19-year-old with college and school and all the other stuff? You know, it's like it's a tough decision at that point in life.
It should be, I guess. It was not a tough decision for me. I feel like I have to like give a little bit backstory here.
Mm-hmm.
But my mom was a principal ballerina with the Washington Ballet in DC.
Wow.
She was a hardcore ballerina. And my dad did more modern and jazz. And he went to grad school and got a master's and did the whole thing. And my mom was taught that college was for the people that couldn't make it. If you weren't good enough, you went to college so that you could teach. So I didn't want to go to college. I wanted to be good enough. So I was very resistant to going to school. And my parents made a deal with me that I had to do at least 1 year and then I could do what I wanted, but I had to at least try.
One year of college. Okay.
And then we could reassess, but I had to at least try for 1 year.
That's kind of a tough conversation with your mom, who basically said you're a failure, right? Like, if you go to college, you fail. And she's like, you gotta go do 1 year first.
Yeah, well, she didn't say that to me, but that's kind of how the mentality she grew up with.
Yeah, yeah.
Because especially in her time of dancing, that was life, and in the ballet world especially too. But because I wanted to do theater and I didn't want to be a ballerina, the training was pretty necessary. So I was pretty resistant to auditioning for colleges. Bless my dad. He took me to every college audition. He worked so hard to get me to go to school. And I ended up going to ADA, which is an acting conservatory here in the city.
Mm-hmm.
Not to be confused with AMDA.
Yeah. I just learned what AMDA is, so don't worry.
Yeah. Great. And I quit dancing for the year, basically. The most dancing I did was movement for the actor, where my movement teacher first semester never once called me by my name. He only called me Freaky Dancer Girl.
Wow.
And yeah. And I was, you know, just barely 18, because I was also always really young for my age, or young for my grade. And very sheltered and kind of wide-eyed in New York City. And we were in school, and I knew that this was going to be my 1 year, and I didn't want to come back.
Yeah.
Even though I was invited back for second year, and my teachers were very upset with me when I told them I didn't want to come back. And one of my professors said to me, well, you know, musical theater isn't real theater, right?
Yeah. Wow.
And I said, uh-huh. And she goes, you'll never make it.
Wow. Such said, motivating the youth here.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Professors.
So supportive.
Yeah.
But I auditioned for the tour that year when I was in school. I missed rehearsal for one of my exam plays to go audition for the tour, because I thought, well, I know Copeland, so how much harder can it be than this? And I didn't book it, and I was devastated. And then I left school, and I went back home, and I was working at a dinner theater in Maryland.
Okay.
Toby's Dinner Theater of Columbia, Maryland, where you wait the tables as well as be in the show.
Yeah.
And I saw that they were having auditions again for Cats. So I took the train back up to New York and auditioned, and then I booked it.
And you booked it. And you booked it as a swing, which blows my mind to be able to just do in general, of like, hey, we're not just going to learn one character. You did what? Five?
I think I did five. I was thinking about it today, and I believe I swung five.
Okay, I can tell you what was listed. It was Cassandra, Bomb Ballerina, Demeter, Rumpelteazer, Victoria.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I can't fathom doing Bomb Ballerina and Demeter like on back-to-back nights of the same kind of choreography, but in opposite sides and other half of the song. Like, that is just insane to me.
You know, it's interesting. It becomes easy, especially with cats like them that are counterparts, because they're always together. So you kind of can see the hole to fill.
Yeah.
And, you know, the other cats are very good about kind of shoving you with a paw in the right direction if you're not doing the right thing. But there were definitely days when I was on for so many different people, I would have to look at my unitard and see what color unitard I was wearing and if I had leg warmers on. And if I did, then I would know who I was. And there were definitely some times when I would be on and I would look down because I would be confused and then be like, oh crap, I'm a kitten, and have to drop to the drop to the ground because I was standing and I shouldn't be standing.
Wow. Yeah. So you're super young, you go on tour, you're probably the youngest in the cast. What do you remember about being like part of that family, being your first time, you know, in this true professional gig, and going all around the country on a tour that's been going for years at that point, right? Like it's kind of midway through its cycle.
You know, it's interesting. It was hard. I definitely felt left out a lot. because there was just a lot that I couldn't participate in because I was under 21.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I really enjoyed when we were in Canada because I was able to drink with the cast. Or when we were in Brazil and Chile, because my year of tour, we went to Brazil for a month and Chile for a week.
Wow.
Which was incredible.
Yeah.
But I also, partway through the year, also became the assistant stage manager, assistant company manager, as the youngest person on tour. And wow. I would call the show sometimes.
Wow. So you were in the booth or whatever, calling for as a 19-year-old.
Yep. Lights 124, go. Lights 125, go. Like, that was me.
Wow. That is impressive. Okay. Yeah. So then mom made it. You're not just professionally doing it. You're doing it all.
Yeah. Look at me, mom.
That is incredible. Okay. So you do this tour, you do your year there, and you call the show, you get to know the show really intimately by doing that. And then it's 10 years, almost 11 years later. So there's obviously career in between there, but what was that moment like when you realized, hey, there's a chance to be part of this revival?
Well, I certainly was excited about it. And I was really excited that Andy was going to update the choreography because I've always had a lot of respect for him. And I felt like the movement could use an update. And I know his storytelling, and I thought that that could be a really interesting update to the original material.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I did the tour, no brainer. I knew Copeland when I was 12. Clearly, I
ready to go.
Yeah.
So I want to talk a little bit about that because there's definitely, I didn't realize how big of a, I've only seen Andy's choreography live and I've seen the VHS, the same copy. I mean, I've seen it on an iPad because I didn't have the VHS, but like there are definitely people who listen to this podcast who are what I call them traditionalists. It's like, it is Julian Lin's choreography or nothing. And then there's like a lot of people that kind of see the value of both. So having done both, what are some of the updates that you noticed that you thought were, you know, like it stays pretty true to her, like it honors her choreography, but there are some differences. So you've got the experience both sides of it. What are some of those things that you noticed that you can kind of speak to about those differences?
I thought that, you know, I wasn't in the original cast of the revival, but a lot of the most iconic choreography is still there. That was not touched. Copeland is still there.
Yeah.
You know, Victoria's solo is still there.
Yep.
There's the things that, you know, Mr. Mistopheles' huge turn sequence, still there. Like, there's lots of things that I feel would be criminal to touch, and Andy knew that.
Yeah, for sure.
And they stayed. But I thought that a lot of storytelling got a lot clearer. And, you know, it's a hard plot to figure out anyway.
Eesh. You're telling me 150 episodes later trying to figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah. But I thought that he made the plot a little more understandable and feel a little more succinct.
Is there anything in particular that you like stood out from that? Like, when you say that, like, because I saw the reverse. So like, I didn't have this like, oh, I know the whole choreography and the VHS and everything. And so I only saw the first story was Andy's version. And then I went back and saw a different version, mostly because there's also other changes, you know, not just like there's not Growl Tiger and some of that other stuff that was cut. But was there any like, are there other parts that you thought were maybe clearer because of it?
I felt like, especially in the ball, it felt a little bit more storytelling as opposed to just incredible dance for the sake of incredible dance.
Yeah. Because
that's
to me,
where
the,
I felt
to
it
me,
the
ball's an orgy, though, right? Like, that's what everyone's told me. You're watching an orgy. So is he adding plot to the orgy? Like, how does that work?
Yeah. You know, it's like, we're adding plot to the orgy. I also feel like the opening number, too, felt a little bit more pointed.
Yeah, I mean, I'm asking out of no knowledge to be able to add to this conversation because I watched it in the reverse. Like I can talk to you for hours about the backstory of the characters, but this particular topic is very hard for me as someone who's not a dancer. Like I know Copeland, as in it's been said to me enough times. I know it's a very famous piece of choreography. If you asked me to like pull out Copeland from the ball, I wouldn't have any idea what you're talking about.
Okay, so in the ball, there's a part where everybody is kind of in an orgy ball in the middle of the stage, and the music gets really
quiet. That's the clump?
The clump.
Okay.
Yep. And then you hear like, boop, 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 and everybody starts popping out, looking kind of paranoid.
Okay.
And then the music starts to build, and it's dun 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 dun, and there's a huge light change, and then people start like undulating and getting all this energy, and everybody starts a couple people at a time doing different choreography. And then all of a sudden, the entire stage breaks out in the same choreography where like their knee kind of shoots into their chest.
Okay.
And their arm shoots up and they like all jump out and their arms reach up to the sky.
So I now know what you're talking about purely because when I TikTok and I use those like green screen things, that's one picture I use very frequently.
Yes.
And it's like one of the classic. Okay. So I now know.
Yes.
Thank you. Now I know what Copeland is. I've never known. I've heard it, but now I know. Okay. So I want to go back to coming into Broadway. So you come in partway through. You're going to close the show. You're at the end of it. Mm-hmm. You get brought in through a rehearsal process and everything. I'm always fascinated by how much you're told of the character development when you're not in that initial, like, everyone together storytelling. So how much did they tell you about Demeter? Or how much do they say, you've already done this. You get it. Add your own.
I think I was very lucky in that I was already so deeply familiar with the material and the source material that, and I already had such a very clear vision of who Demeter was and who she was to me, that I was really allowed to kind of have free reign over her as a character. And I wasn't given as much backstory on her because I didn't really need it.
Yeah, you come in and you know it. So they're saying, here's the changes, here's the choreography change, here's the a couple like story plot changes that you need to know, but you don't need to know that her backstory with McCavity and all that stuff because that was told to you. What do you remember from 2006 when you were on your tour when they did that whole, because you were learning five backstories.
I was.
What do you remember about what they told you then?
I remember, you know, Demeter had lived a hard life. She was probably a street cat. She had been kidnapped by McCavity and used and abused by him.
Yeah.
And somehow escaped him, but still had this odd fascination with him.
Yeah.
And was terrified of him, but also obsessed with him. And could always feel his presence before she even saw or knew that he was there. She could just feel that he was there and was desperate to be part of the tribe again and was loved by the tribe and was like a teenager cat. As opposed to a kitten or an adult cat.
Yep. What about the, do you remember some of the other ones? Like, because you have to do Victoria, right? You've got to do Rumpelteazer. Like, those two have very different stories.
Yeah. Well, you know, Victoria loses her virginity.
On stage.
And on stage. And the Victoria solo is her discovering her body. And kind of figuring that out for the first time. Which was really interesting because I was on that tour. I was a very innocent, inexperienced young lady. And so I did not really understand a lot of the movement that I, especially as Bomb Ballerina, like I really had to fake it till I made it with being the sexy cat.
But so if you go back to that moment too, like you're hearing these stories, you did it as a 12-year-old, or you learned pieces of it as a 12-year-old.
Yeah.
You've watched this VHS as a child. Like, did you realize any of that? Or was that very much during that process? You're like, whoa, wait a second. What did I miss?
Yeah. No, it wasn't until adulthood where I had a moment of like,
Yeah.
And even a lot of that I didn't have until I did it on Broadway.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I had lived so much more life
and
had so much more life experience that there were so many things that I understood that I most certainly did not understand when I was on tour.
Yeah. I mean, as 19, you have your 1 year of college under your belt and that's it. And so you are, I kind of envision, I saw this for the first show as an adult who moved here, you know, to New York and was very mesmerized by like, wait a second, what did I just watch? But I didn't know the lore of all this before. So I just was like, this is something. But even I didn't pull half of that stuff together of like, and then as you get told it, that makes sense. I see it now, but that's gotta be such a polarizing thing to learn at that age. And then also bring back 10 years later into your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think, a lot of things didn't fully land for me when I was 19. Mm-hmm. You know, I was told the information, but I don't think it really processed until I was an actual adult.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, I mean, for sure. I think it's also that's experience too as a performer actor. But also there's, you know, I don't think you've became more cat, you know, in 10 years. But
no.
But you definitely can relate to more of the interpersonal pieces of the content at points.
Yeah. Yeah. No, at 19, I was really just angry if I didn't kick myself in the head every time I did a bat ma. I would come off stage and be angry if I didn't touch my shin to my forehead every single time. It was a failure of a show.
We're going to take a quick break and then we'll be back for more of The Wrong Cat Died.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Were there any moments on tour that were like super memorable? Because, I mean, obviously you were, again, really young, but you're doing all these different tracks. You're the child of you're calling it. You're doing all these different things. Like what stands out from that? I mean, it's been many years now.
Yeah. I mean, I have a lot of moments. There are a lot of stories that I tell from that tour that were insane. And a lot of it was frankly things that didn't necessarily happen to me. It was stuff that I witnessed happen on tour. Because we had the blow up set. So it was
I call it the bounce castle hat set.
Yes. It's what it was. It's a moon bounce.
Yeah.
And there was one day during Rum Tum Tugger where there's a tag on at the end of the song, and in the original choreography, Rum Tum Tugger is up on the car trunk in a spotlight dancing, and the entire cast is facing upstage watching him doing all this choreography. And Dave, the guy that was playing Rum Tum Tugger, he lost his balance and he started to fall backwards. And you weren't supposed to touch the balloon, but he couldn't catch his balance. everybody was dancing and you saw Dave, and then suddenly you just saw a hand and a tail because he had fallen between the trunk and the moonbound.
Wow.
And everybody on stage lost their minds. But then Grizabella enters and everybody is supposed to be
serious and
and scared. And everybody was laughing hysterically. Yeah.
Do you remember who you were? Were you on that night?
I wasn't. Oh, okay. I was in watching the monitor backstage.
When,
dying with laughter.
Yeah. I mean, you didn't have to get serious. Everyone else did. You got to keep laughing. What was the craziest, broken moment you had to deal with as calling the show? Like, was there any times where you had to like really quickly fix something because something went crazy wrong?
No. I would call the entire show until there was one section of the show that I never called. They always had the PSM call.
Hmm.
You had to cue several things at one time. And so, you know, for most of the show, our stage manager would be either, if I was calling, she would be out taking notes or watching or, you know, doing one of the other stage manager tracks.
Yeah.
But then for this one moment in the show, it was during Growl Tiger? It's been a long time.
Did you have the like boat that came down for Growl Tiger?
We had a piece of a boat.
Okay.
And then a drop.
Okay. Because I know that earlier productions had like a ship come down essentially during that number. But yeah, I don't know if it was in the bounce castle.
So it was a drop that came down in front of the bounce castle. And then we had like a piece of a ship, set piece that people could stand on and jump off of.
Yeah.
And then all of our, I hate even saying it, all of our Siamese costumes were giant and cumbersome, and we had these really huge.
Because weren't they in the back of Tritons. That, essentially, of that? Because, again, this is a number I don't know as well, because one I've seen as often.
Yeah.
It was rightfully eliminated in the revival.
Very rightfully, yeah.
So they're behind the boat, essentially, or they're like on the boat, technically, when they're having that section. But you didn't call that because that's too many things going on. It's just always,
too many things. And especially at the end of that number, the drop, is released from a magnet and one of the cats has to run it off stage, and there's also big light changes happening. So I never called that moment. And I did call the spaceship at the end of the show. And then I would talk to Grizabella on the phone because they had a little phone for her in the production on tour. Lack of a better term, a spaceship drops down from the ceiling.
She kind of climbs up, right? And then
climbs into it, hooks herself in, and then it takes her back up into the rafters of the theater. And there was a little, in case there was, you know, an emergency or a problem, there's a little phone in the spaceship.
It's like a car phone. 2016 car phone in the spaceship. Did you set out to call, like, to do the assistant state? Like, was that something you wanted to do, or is it just
why not? So what happened was there were some large fights that went down. I won't tell you all the details. We can talk about it when it's not recording. But there were some large fights that happened in our cast. And some behavior was displayed by some people that was not the best.
Okay.
And the person who was originally the assistant stage manager, assistant company manager, was asked to step down from the role.
Mm.
And when the general manager asked the crew who they thought should take over, apparently everybody said me.
Wow. I mean, that's great, right? Like, that's an honor.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you had a spicy first professional tour, it sounds like. Yeah, okay.
It was spicy.
That is, we won't say anymore. We don't want to get anybody in trouble. We don't want to say any names, but I'm sure there are people that can go read and find stuff or find versions of stories of stuff that's out there. But okay, let's move on. I don't want to dwell on that anymore too much. So I am a little curious about with your cast. I've talked to a lot of the 2016 cast, and there it finishes and then it goes immediately on tour. So a couple people kind of continued to go on tour, but then the movie came out, which is what started this podcast. Did you all, like, I've heard some of the stories off this podcast, but like, what was your all's reaction being really the closest to the content at that moment? Like, you had finished, I think it's probably 2 years after you finish that the movie comes out. So there's this tour going on, but you all were really the ones where I'm like, you just did it. So did you all have this, like, what is happening kind of text conversation? Like, how did your cast unfold with the trailer and the movie?
Yeah, I mean, we had all the conversations. We also, they were developing it when we were still open. So Andy would come back for cleanup rehearsals and we'd be like, Andy, what's going on?
Yeah.
Give us the scoop.
Yeah. I didn't even think about that. They're making it while you're still performing.
Yeah. So I know there had been some makeup trials and CGI trials that happened before they even filmed that were not desirable. But we were all very curious as to what was going to happen. And everybody kind of kept trying to be like, Andy, what characters do you need for this movie? Yeah. We're available.
Yeah,
we can do it.
You need an answer? You need a cat back there?
Yeah.
That is fun. Okay, I don't want to dwell anymore on that movie. I just was curious because you all were very close to it. And I know that was like, had to be a little bit of a bizarre time of having such a different version of it coming out when you've had something. And you all had kind of a slightly different version to begin with coming out. But okay, I want to do some rapid fire. So if you could go on for one night with any cat, whether it's male, female, in your vocal range, whatever, just if you could go perform one night, who are you going on as?
I think I'm sticking with Demeter.
We want to stay with Demeter.
Yeah, I think I'm doubling down. I'm sticking with Demeter.
You had fun. You've done it twice. You're ready for round three.
Yeah. She gets to dance like a fiend and she gets to sing her face off and you get to do some, I think, really great acting.
Yeah.
And character work.
You really do have a track that has a ton of the acting because there's a lot of, it's one of the few backstories where it's like, no, this one's very well developed and it's a lot. And so there's a lot that's not said that's very well implied that you have to convey with body movements and dance numbers and just the way you portray on stage versus some of the other ones, which I think are a little bit more clear. Like, you know, Gus is old. You got to portray old. Grisabella is worn. Like, you have these sums that are very obvious. And I think Demeter's one that's a little bit less, but has a lot of depth.
Yeah, absolutely. And she starts the show with the headlights from the car.
Okay. Does she... Wait, so do you not get to do green eyes then?
You don't have to do green eyes.
Don't have to or get to. Which is it? As I say, did you... Because you got to do it as a swing. Did you enjoy that part?
It depended on the track and it depended on the theater on how hard it was to get backstage in time for the opening number.
That's okay. That makes sense. If you got to like sprint around, you know, the lobby to get there in some cases, I'm sure, or some weird things. Did you ever just crawl up from like the aisle?
I think some cats could, but it kind of depended where you were. Where you were stationed.
Yeah, I guess that's true. There's like the second time I saw it on Broadway was I was up at the, you know, mezzanine or balcony. I was up and there are cats up there and they've got to somehow get down on stage quickly, which I'm sure is a trick.
It is. Although, you know, they had a lot of cool little tunnels and things at the Neil Simon that they built in for the show.
Made it easier. But on tour, you're at a different place all the time and praying.
You're running all over the place,
You're just praying that it's not bad. Okay, who are your favorite and least favorite characters in the show? So take people out of it, but which cat would you love and which cat would you not be friends with?
Love, I would say Jenny Any Duck. She's a riot. What a fun time.
Yeah,
She's a fun time gal. And those sparkly shoes, please, what could be better? Get rid of Growl Tiger. Bye.
Growl Tiger. Okay, so he's not in your second time. So if I take him out, who's the other one? I agree with that though completely.
Yeah. Ugh. I'm gonna get rid of
Or not even get rid of, just who would you not hang out with? Like you're the Jellicle tribe. You're friends with Jenny. You want to go have fun. Your drinks or your Canada drinks. But who are you not like inviting, or who are you annoyed with as your family member?
I am not. Wow. I feel like Sophie's choice.
Yeah.
I think I'm not hanging out with old dude.
Oh, okay. You're never getting picked then. You're just not hanging out. All right.
I would like to get picked. I'd like some time to hang out with my people now that I'm back with them. But,
yeah.
I don't know. We all love him. Although, actually, you know what? I'm going to change my answer. I think I don't care enough about like syllabub.
Okay. I love this. That's a great one. Just, you know what? Yeah, fine. The number one answer is Busted First. That's why I'm always like waiting for people.
Oh, I forgot about him. I think I blocked him out.
That's the problem, right? Okay.
Yeah, but
Syllabub's a good answer. Nice. Yeah, old dude. Nice. I don't disagree with old dude either. That's, you know, he's kind of intimidating and kind of comes in and he's a serial killer at some capacity. Like,
yeah,
he's killing
a little bit of a buzzkill.
Yeah. Okay. What's your favorite song from the show?
Okay, I love Grizabella the Glamour Cat.
So the first act piece of it, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Okay, that's great.
Yeah.
That's not a common answer. I love it.
Yeah, that like little section, I don't know. I think melodically that part is so pretty and haunting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know exactly what part you're talking about. It's great. It is. I love it because my answer changes depending on mood and when you ask. And I mean, there's a couple I distinctly don't like. But most of them I'm like, oh yeah, I never thought about that one. That's a great answer. Okay. Which cat, I always ask a fun one or a slightly different one. And since you got thrown into the fire of, calling the show, which cat do you think would be best at calling the show?
Skimbleshanks.
I think there's only two answers. It's Skimbleshanks or Mungustrap.
Yeah.
But Skimbleshanks would be, he's no light is going to be off at all.
Mm-mm.
Perfectly on time.
Yeah, not on his watch.
Yeah.
His very large watch.
Yes. Okay. Most important question. Mm-hmm. I've argued at length. I don't think Grizabella should be the Jellicle choice. So are you going to defend Grizabella or are you going to pick a different Jellicle choice?
I'm not going to defend Grizabella.
I love it. I don't care what you say next. That's all I needed to hear.
Great.
Yeah.
Close up shop.
Done. We're done. Okay. Thanks.
Bye. Even though I want to hang out with her at all times, I think maybe Jenny Any Dots or no, Jenny Any Dots.
Okay. So give me your rationale for Jenny.
She works so hard to be the one to get picked. She trains little mice. She teaches them how to make lace, which is what tatting is.
I like the version.
Sorry, I didn't mean to.
No. I love that. That's
mansplaining that.
It's great too, because I had to look it up. I did not know.
Yeah.
And I had to look it up and I had this vision of like, she's giving tattoos. I was like, that's just what I wanted it to be. I knew it was wrong.
That should be it.
But I'm like, that would be so much better of just having her, you know, giving little tattoos to everybody. So I knew that was incorrect, but I liked that better. So I've kind of always still envisioned like she's crocheting, which I knew, and then she's giving tattoos.
Frankly, that makes me want it to be her even more.
Yeah.
I feel like she deserves it even more. Look at all these skills that she has passed on and has developed. She's worked so hard to create this giant number to make her case. And then they just leave her by the wayside.
Yeah. Are they okay? How do they handle next year if she's gone? It seems like she's so important to them. Who cares? She's coming back and someone will figure it out.
Yeah.
Somebody
always picks up the reins. She's taught so many people how to tap dance. Somebody else will be able to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. They've all got their I don't know what tattoo you'd give a cat, but they've all got their own new ink. They're ready to go. They have little
like mouse tails for each mouse that they've eaten or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
instead of like a teardrop,
they've got a mouse tail for all the cockroaches that they've taken care of.
You know? Yeah.
I'm a fan of that decision. She's not always chosen. She's got some votes, but she doesn't have a lot. So I'm all for it. I do think she works hard. She definitely puts her effort into it. I think her disadvantages, she's early in the show. And as someone who thinks this is the X Factor on Jugs, that's always tough to be like the second performer when you're voting, the America's vote or Britain's vote or whoever's vote. It's usually the last two that have the best shot.
But she skins herself alive. Yeah. What more could you ask?
You don't have to convince me. I am here for it.
That huge coat comes off and she's in fringe, but that's her. I mean, she skins herself alive.
Yeah, she does a lot. She might sleep all day, but she's got to
watch out.
She's done a lot.
Watch out when she's awake.
When she's awake, she is busy.
Yeah.
I love it. I'm here for any non-Grizabella vote. So that's my goal, is to slowly convince the voting public that she's the wrong choice.
Yeah, Grizabella tries too hard. She's too much of a pick-me girl.
I think she just should spend next year with the family. Like, if you're going to accept
her
back.
That's a much nicer way to put it.
you're just like, forget her. I'm done. You don't even want her to come back to the tribe. You're just send her back off. But,
you know, Demeter, she has to be the broken one. There can't be two of us.
That's true.
Didn't I try hard enough to get back here? Now you're stealing my thunder already.
Is Grizabella Demeter's mom?
I have never considered that ever.
No. Okay. Now, so let's put it to the test. It wasn't told to you. You never played it, but could it be possible?
Sure. It could absolutely be possible. I, in my brain, Demeter is fascinated by Grizabella because they have similar lived experiences.
Yeah.
And she is curious about her and fascinated about her, but has heard so many stories about her that she's scared to talk to her, but she feels connection to her.
Yeah. I've always felt she's like one wrong decision away from being her. And so that's kind of like, it's like, ooh. So do you play Bomb Ballerina as sister or friend?
Sister.
Sister. So that's kind of where I think it gets interesting if Grizabella is the mom for those. Now, it might not work because if you're not kittens, she might be not old enough to be mom, but I think that's a really interesting proposition of Bomb Ballerina is the positive, what glamorous side that she used to be of her as mom and daughter. And you're we are one or two bad decisions away from being following in mom's footsteps.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I got to do it again.
I know. You're round three. You have to play it a slightly different way when she comes back.
Yeah.
Well,
man, I don't know if my hips could handle that, but one of them's metal now. I don't know if I could do it.
I think what's cool about the show is you could come as other cats. Like play other characters and do it for years. But it's a little bit easier on the male track, I think, because you have Gus. So you can kind of like old Deuteronomy Gus, you can kind of work your way through the ages. But I think you can, there's ways for you to keep doing this.
You know what? You're right. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, this has been fun. How can people stay in touch with you and social media, keep up with what you're doing?
I am on Instagram. I'm on TikTok. I think on Instagram, I'm just at Samantha Sturm. And on TikTok, I'm Samantha Sturm NYC.
Great. We'll link everything too. Okay. And this has been so fun. Thank you for taking the time and sharing your experiences.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I appreciate it so much.
Awesome. And thanks everyone else for listening to this episode of The Wrong Cat Died, the podcast breakdown of the catastrophe. To follow along, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or any other listen to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Threads, and TikTok at The Wrong Cat Died, or check out our website, thewrongcatdied.com.
Have you ever wondered how your favorite performer actually feels? Well, here's your chance. Welcome to The Quiet Part Out Loud with me, Bobby Steggert, Broadway actor, and now a therapist to a whole host of Broadway creatives. Part interview, part therapy, this is not your typical podcast. We'll go right to the heart of things with some of your favorite artists, what they still struggle with, what lessons they've learned, what they haven't figured out yet. There's enormous power in saying the quiet part out loud. Are you listening?
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.